Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is John Hunter Nemechek from Nemco Motorsports, and you're listening to Thursday Night Thunder on the Speedway Digest Radio Network.
Y'all ready for this?
Live from Talladega, you're in the pit stop with Tenda Spain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Good evening from Dega Nation. I apologize about that, John Hunter Nemechek. I used Thursday Night Thunder and I had mine in there and I got it mixed up. I'm Tim Spain alongside my good friend and CEO, SpeedwayDigest.com up in the Commonwealth of Virginia. How you doing, bud?
Oh, I'm doing all right. We got a little thunderstorm coming up through our way.
Oh, yeah. We had a couple come through a while ago. That's why I text you to be aware. But maybe we won't drop. And if we do, we apologize. We'll try to get back as soon as we can. But, Stephen, let's go ahead and bring the official ref on the show. Let's go ahead and bring Reverend Joe in the pit stop, Tim Spain and Stephen Wilson, and get everything started. Reverend Joe, how you doing tonight, bud?
Well, struggling, honestly. Got problems with my heart and we had to go to another city to get my heart worked on and stuck in a hotel. It's cost us a bundle, but and I'm wearing a defibrillator. Looks like a bra. But anyway, otherwise God is good.
Yes, sir. Amen. We've been praying for you, Rev.
I appreciate that. Let me pray
for
everybody. Lord, we come before you tonight and we ask you to bless the show, bless all those that listen. Bless everybody involved with auto racing all over the country, and bless our troops as they serve in other lands and even here to protect us, all those that wear a uniform to protect us, keep them from being targets. We ask you to bless their families and their homes, and we thank you for sending Jesus Christ to die for our sins so we wouldn't have to. We thank you for all that in the name of Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Amen.
Amen, Reverend Jeff. Always great invocation. Let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website, right?
Yes, they can follow me on Facebook, Reverend Joe, Rev Joe Bobico, and they can follow my writings there. They can always look me up on AOL at J. Use OnTrack with Jesus at AOL.com. And our website is OnTrackWithJesus.org. Give us a holler anytime.
Reverend Joe, thank you very much. I know you're not feeling well. We're all praying for you. The whole NASCAR family's praying for you. You get better. Tell Miss Betty we said hello, bud.
I will do that. Thank you. God bless you guys.
All right. Well, God bless you. Talk to you next week, Reverend Joe.
All right. Thanks.
You're welcome. That was our longtime Reverend Joe. He's been on the show ever since we've been going, Stephen. Stephen, we've had a little bit of need. Well, let me let everybody know what we got going on tonight. At the bottom of the hour, we've got we're going to talk real old school racing. We've got a legendary gas man, Dale Earnhardt Sr., Mr. Chocolate Myers. He also is on SiriusXM NASCAR Channel 90. He will be joining us at the bottom of the hour, 7:30 Eastern Time. Also, a gentleman by the name of Joe Dan Bailey, son of H.P. Bailey. Joe Dan Bailey was a tire specialist also for Dale Earnhardt Sr. We'll have all that coming up at the bottom of the hour. We're going to do a big round table. We're going to try not to step on toes, let everybody talk. And if we get all jumbled up there, I still think we're going to have a great show because I'm chocolate tickled about coming on. I know Joe Dan is too. But, Stephen, since we've had the show last week, last week Hendrick Motorsports announced that Dale Earnhardt Jr. would not race at Loudon as far as concussion-like symptoms. And, you know, last week we talked about John West Hanley also. Have you heard any news? Has anything come out yet about if Jeff Gordon is going to get an 88 car this weekend at Indy? And we'll talk a little bit about concussions. I mean, you know, I'm not a doctor. I know you're not. You're an IT specialist, and I'm just an old broke-down lineman here in Talladega, Alabama. But we'll try to let everybody know what a concussion is and what it actually does. And if you have multiple concussions, I mean, you know, you're susceptible to another one.
But just to go back to the story, prior to Loudon, New Hampshire, Dale Earnhardt Jr. and Hendrick Motorsports announced, obviously, that Dale Earnhardt would not be in that car this past weekend at Loudon, just for the fact that going back just a couple weeks prior to that and leading up into that event, there were some issues that he felt that he needed to address. He had been to his doctor, thought that there were some, he thought it was some sinus infection, and it turned out to be a little bit more than that. NASCAR did tell him to go and see Dr. Petty, who has worked on and worked with many of the drivers within NASCAR, many of them who have had concussions. He's been around the sport for many, many years. He's a neurologist within in the sport. They trust Dr. Petty there in the Charlotte area. So NASCAR has, obviously Dale Jr. and Hendrick Motorsports, they felt the need to take him out the car this past weekend at Loudon. This past weekend, while they were in Loudon, Doug Dickart of Hendrick Motorsports said that if Dale Earnhardt was not cleared to come back at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, that they would put Jeff Gordon in the number 88 for this weekend only at Indianapolis. There has been no announcements as to whether Dale Jr. has been cleared to race this weekend at Indianapolis. There has been no announcements from Hendrick Motorsports as if Jeff Gordon will be in that number 88 car this weekend at Indianapolis. So we are all sitting and waiting, just like everybody else is, to find out whether Jeff Gordon will make his return to the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series in 2016 as a relief driver for the number 88 and Dale Jr. It's one of those situations that obviously you look back to Dale Earnhardt back in 2012. He did sustain near the same symptoms He was out on the car for multiple events back then. One of the factors that they did feel leading into this is that they felt that the contributing factors were that, you know, his sustained wrecks over a number of weeks. They did say Daytona. They mentioned other events that he had sustained wrecks in could have led into these concussion-like symptoms, and that's why they felt getting him out of the car was most appropriate. And, you know, NASCAR has, advised these drivers. It's in now in their policies and rule books that, you know, for the safety and health, not only of yourself, but the competitors around you, to step out of the car, make sure that you're well, and to be cleared not only by an independent doctor outside of the sport, but the medical review board that NASCAR does have in-house before that you can come back into competition within racing. And John West Talent is also going through the same similar situation. He has to follow the same course just as Dale Earnhardt is doing himself. He will have to see and be treated. They have concussion tests that are pretty standardized between many different sports. They've come in line, and they look at multiple different, they look at multiple different things when they're doing these standardized concussion tests to ensure that the symptoms are no longer there, no longer present, before they actually will allow you to continue to compete.
And Stephen, you and I both got the press release from Hendrick Motorsports. You and I both posted on our, you posted on Speedway Digest, and I posted on my site and pages. And if I can, I'd like to go ahead and, this press release was last week, July 14th, from Hendrick Motorsports. Dale Earnhardt Jr. will not compete in the July 17th NASCAR Sprint Cup Series event at New Hampshire Motor Speedway after experiencing concussion-like symptoms. Earnhardt, driver of the number 88 Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports, was evaluated this week in Charlotte, which was last week, and today was not cleared by physicians to race. Alex Bowman will be the team substitute driver this weekend at New Hampshire. Quote, Dale Earnhardt Jr., I wasn't feeling great the week going into Kentucky Speedway, and I thought it was possibly severe allergies, Earnhardt said. I saw a family doctor and was given medication for allergies and a sinus infection. When that didn't help, I decided to dig a little deeper. Because of my symptoms and my history with concussions, and after my recent wreck, like you mentioned, at Michigan and Daytona, I reached out and met with a neurological specialist. After further evaluation, they felt it was best for me to sit out. I'm disappointed about missing New Hampshire this weekend. I'm looking forward to treatment with the goal of getting back in the race car when the doctors say I'm ready. A timetable for Earnhardt Jr.'s return has not been established. Hendrick Motorsports will provide an update next week, which is this week, regarding plans for the July 24th event at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm proud of Dale for standing up, said Rick Hendrick, owner of Hendrick Motorsports. The number one priority is his health, so we're going to give him all the time he needs. We completely support the decision by the doctors, and we will be ready to go win races when he's 100%. In the meantime, we have confidence in Greg Ives and the team, and we know they'll do a great job. Just wanted to read that media thing off and say, just to let some of our listeners know, I don't know that much about concussions. I know I had one back when I was a teenager, just playing football, or I have had one. But what is a concussion? Now, I'm not a doctor. Everybody, I'm not a doctor. I'm just reading this off of WebMD because I ain't got a clue. A concussion is a type of traumatic brain injury that is caused by a blow to the head or body, a fall, or another injury that jars or shakes the brain inside the skull. Although there may be cuts or bruises on the head or face, there may be no other visible signs of a brain injury. You don't have to pass out, lose consciousness, to have a concussion. Some people will have obvious symptoms of a concussion, such as passing out or forget what happened. right before the injury, but other people won't. With rest, most people fully recover from a concussion. Some people recover within a few hours. Other people take a few weeks to recover. So, Stephen, with Dale Earnhardt Jr. having, correct me if I'm wrong, this might be his third concussion. And I know, correct me if I'm wrong again, what was his name that had the concussion? Ricky Craven had multiple concussions. That's the reason he got out of the car, correct, Steve?
Yeah, Dale Jr., until your first point, yes, Dale Jr. has had multiple concussions, as I talked about a little bit earlier. And this is the second time that he's been out of the car. So, you know, for him, it's something that he's obviously had to deal with long term. And just a couple of months ago, he did say that he was going to donate his brain to for medical study in many, many years, because of these dramatic injuries that he has sustained over his career. As far as Ricky Craven, I do believe so, but I'm not 100% sure on that one.
Okay. And, Stephen, let's go back and listen to the media center on the 15th Friday where Hendrick Motorsports was talking there at live. And we'll listen to a little bit about this. I know it's 24 minutes long, but we're not going to listen to all. I just want to let everybody hear what Hendrick Motorsports statement was in the media center at Loud, New Hampshire this past Friday.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to New Hampshire Motor Speedway. We're going to kick off today's media availability with some guests from Hendrick Motorsports. We have to my far right, Doug Ducart, who is the general manager of Hendrick. In the middle is Alex Bowman, who is a substitute driver this weekend in the number 88 Nationwide Chevrolet. And his crew chief for the weekend, to his left, is Greg Ives. Wanted to start off actually just providing a little bit of background on NASCAR's concussion protocol. As you know, NASCAR requires drivers to submit a baseline neurocognitive assessment, such as an impact test, and again, those are only one tool, as a prerequisite for being licensed to compete. This mandate followed a comprehensive industry-wide education process launched by NASCAR in 2013. Additionally, NASCAR's medical advisory group, a team of consulting physicians who work directly with the league on policy development while regularly meeting with drivers to continue the education process, includes many leaders in the neurological field, such as Dr. Vijay Deshmukh of the Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates. Another important element worth noting in the process is the active role our drivers and teams take in monitoring their health. Drivers approach this responsibility very seriously, and that ultimately benefits their entire team, the sport, and their fellow competitors. We applaud Dale Earnhardt Jr. for being a great example dating back to 2012, where he chose not to race in Charlotte and in Kansas during the chase, and has made that decision this weekend as well. So I'm going to turn it over to Mr. Ducart, who has some opening remarks related to the process that led to Dale making the decision not to compete this weekend. Greg?
Thank you, Dave. So I just wanted to lay out kind of what the timeline was for us and how the week went. There's a lot of questions I know on how we got to this point. At Kentucky, Dale started talking to Greg that he wasn't really feeling right, and I think as Dale pointed out in the statement, he felt like he had cold or flu or some sinus infection that was causing him to not feel well. On Tuesday, he notified Greg and I Tuesday morning before a competition meeting that he still wasn't feeling real well. He had gone to the doctor to try to understand what he had going on. Again, he thought he had some sort of sinus infection. And at that point, he told Greg and I to be thinking about potential backup plans if we had to put someone in the car to backfill for him, like he would start the car and we might have a replacement driver after he started the car to have a contingency plan for that. And at that point, that's when Dale and Greg and I felt like Alex was the right person. He's run the Xfinity car. He's done a good job in that car. He is part of the Junior Motorsports system, part of our system. And so Greg reached out to Alex. Alex came in Tuesday night to get fitted for the car, and at that time it was in the contingency that he would have to backfill for Dale after Dale started the race. Dale then went and saw a team of neurologists, and in the past 2 days have been going through some tests, and yesterday around noon is when I found out that Dale could not be in the car for this weekend based on their suggestion. And of course, as Rick said, we 100% support that. And as Dave said, we're proud of him making that decision. The most important thing in this whole process is for Dale to get better and feel better. And we're going to let that happen on the timeline that it's going to happen on. And so basically less than 24 hours ago is when we found out that Dale couldn't run. We had Alex lined up to be in the car. It made perfect sense. And I have confidence in he and Greg will do a good job this weekend.
Thanks, Doug. Just a question for you, Alex. Obviously, a lot has happened in the last 12 hours. Share with us your approach this weekend, obviously your experience in the Sprint Cup over the last couple of years and how that may apply to your racing this weekend here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, it's been a crazy 12 hours for sure. I think the first time Greg called me, I was at work, so I didn't even answer. But it's definitely not the circumstances that I want to get an opportunity like this, but obviously hoping Dale feels better, but at the same time it's the best opportunity I've ever had in my life, and I'm ready to just plug into to their program and do my job, give the best feedback I can, and go from there. I'm really confident in the whole team. Obviously they bring great race cars to the track every weekend, so if I just do my job, I feel like I'll just be good to plug into it.
All right, thanks, Alex. We'll actually open it up for questions now for Greg or Doug or Alex. We'll start in the front row with Kenny and over to Bob and then to Claire B.
Kenny Bruce with NASCAR.com. For Doug, in the statement yesterday, the official statement from Hendrick was that Dale Jr. was not cleared to race. And in Dale's quote, he said the doctors felt it was best that he didn't race. Whose decision was it? Would the doctors not have cleared him? How would that have all gone down?
I guess I wasn't in the room when all the discussion happened, but I feel like my understanding was Dale was told that he shouldn't race, and I think that he had that he knew he wasn't feeling well and had concerns about being in the car and running the whole race earlier in the week just based on how he's feeling. And then I think as he gained more knowledge, found out that he really needed to get healed, he needed to be out of the car. So I wasn't in the middle of those conversations to know the exact wording, but I think the joint between Dale and his doctors, the best thing for him to get better is to get out of the car.
Yeah, but ultimately it would have been his decision?
I don't know. I wasn't there.
All right, we'll go Bob, Claire B, and then over to Jim.
Bob Pocrisy, ESPN. For Doug, I kind of have two questions. The first is there any concern that this could be career-threatening or career-ending for Dale? And then also, did you all talk and or will consider asking Jeff Gordon to go and get in the car?
I'm not going to speculate on Dale's future. I mean, the most important thing is for this process to play out for him to feel better. And at the end of all that, what's the right thing to do, that'll become clear when more knowledge is gained on how he's feeling. As far as Jeff's situation, certainly, he's a four-time champion, 93 wins. He's not a bad person to think about to put in the car. This week he's in France. So obviously in the way I laid out the way the week went, we didn't even think we were going to need a replacement driver. We just thought we were needing a backup driver. However, if Dale is not able to go in Indianapolis, we will put Jeff Gordon in the car.
For sure.
That's for sure.
Okay.
If Dale's not ready. I mean, obviously, we want Dale to get, when Dale is ready, it's his car to get back into. But if Dale can't go next week, Jeff Gordon will be the driver at Indianapolis.
Claire B., then to Jim.
Claire B. Lang, Sirius XM NASCAR Radio. I have two questions. One is for Greg Ives. Greg, what kind of conversations have you had with Dale? And if you look at the video, he mentioned Michigan and Daytona, that those hits were not seemingly that hard. Were you aware at that time that he had, you know, maybe suffered something where he hit his head or it was violent, or and or what kind of conversations have you had with him?
No, I mean, I haven't, you know, with Michigan or Daytona, I don't know any of those scenarios to, you know, for him to say that he didn't feel well there. Basically, the timeline of what Doug spoke about what is basically how it all came about to me, and that's how we gained the knowledge about Dale's condition and how he felt. So, you know, really just based on allergies and potential sinus infection is kind of where he thought he was having some issues. So, you know, speculating back then, I don't know, because that wasn't even on the top of my mind.
And, Doug, you talked about you're not going to speculate about career ending. What have the doctors said? Like, we've just got to wait and see. We'll take it 1 week at a time. Is there any light of Indianapolis? And there's a lot of questions about whether young drivers would even recognize a concussion if Dale Jr., who's so schooled in it and has visited many doctors, would think it's an allergy. Is it something he's picking up on that, I mean, maybe others wouldn't?
Yeah, I think Dale's become more aware over the years. And I think, you know, he's, to his credit, and I think this is important, is, and I think I've heard this in some of the dialogue since the announcement, is the only person that knows how you feel is yourself. I mean, anyone to know, well, I don't feel right today, it has to be you. No one else can do that for you. So you have to be self-aware of how your body responds, and everyone's different. So, I mean, so for Dale, he, you know, I know, I could tell that when he called me Tuesday, it was a tough conversation because, you know, I know for him, as much as he's doing the right thing and he knows he's trying to doing the right thing for himself, I know he feels bad that he feels like he's letting Greg and the team down. But that's just natural. And I think that, you know, and that's how any of us would feel. And that's how the sport's been for a lot of years. And I think one of the good things that's come about is this point system and the way we approach, you know, way back before the chase, you know, missing a race basically cost you, you weren't going to make a championship or get a championship. And I think now, you know, NASCAR system has allowed you to take a step back if you're not feeling well or something happened in an incident on a track, and then you can come and hopefully, you know, we'll apply for a waiver when the time's right and hopefully still have a potential of moving forward. But the important thing is Dale recognized he had something going on and took a step out. And how that is for younger drivers or younger people, I think it's not only drivers, it's, you know, it's football players, it's baseball players, it's anyone in sports, anyone that, you know, falls off a scooter, you know, Do you know if something happened to you? So maybe until it happens a couple times. I haven't had it, so it's hard for me to speculate. Well, go
ahead. And, Stephen, I mean, you know, we can talk about concussions all night, but we've got our bottom of the hour guest. We've got Mr. Joe Dan Bailey, tire specialist for Dale Earnhardt Sr. and son of legendary NASCAR driver Mr. H.B. Bailey. Let's bring Joe Dan in the pit stop. Dennis Payne and Stephen Wilson.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Joe Dan, how you doing tonight, bud?
I'm doing well. How y'all guys doing tonight? Everything going good?
Yes, sir, it's going good. Thank you very much for taking time out to come on the show tonight. I know you got a busy schedule. And we're waiting on chocolate to come on, but I want to introduce you to my good friend, co-host and CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com up in Commonwealth of Virginia, Mr. Stephen Wilson.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Joe. How's it going tonight?
Doing well. I'm sitting out here on my patio, got the ceiling fans going on, looking over some loblolly pines, just kind of hanging out.
Well, we got a little bit of a thunderstorm coming through my way, so you know, I guess it's a little bit better than what you know, I'm going through right at the moment. But you know, you had a career back in the day when you know, NASCAR was a lot different than it really is today. The tire strategies, the pitch strategies, going over the wall, everything has changed between the time that you really were, you know, going across the wall and were, you know, more formally involved of, you know, the way that the pits and, you know, the team strategies play out. Today, technology and, you know, so many things has changed the game of the sport, that in the closeness of the competition level is so much closer these days. You know, when you guys did this, it was a lot, it was really mechanical. And now it's more of an engineering-wise sport, where these guys are coming out of school and they're finding a half a tenth here or a quarter of a tenth there to you know, make these cars go faster, or, you know, a pit stop a little bit better for, you know, with these pit guns and things of that nature. So just talk a little bit about what you guys did back then, when it really wasn't that much of an engineered sport and it was more of a mechanical sport.
Well, yeah, it was more mechanical, but it was also a little bit more innovative back then. You know, the times have changed the way the rules are now, where you back then you had a bigger window to jump through. You know, you had a bigger window to work through, so you were able to be a little bit more innovative and come up with some ideas, where now days the way that everybody's in such a box that you really have to have a lot of smart guys thinking about new stuff and you know, coming up with new ideals for today. So it's basically for the rules that it's kind of created this. But you know, with that, it was a lot of fun back then. We you know, it was a great thing, and it was an honor to do it. You know, it's kind of like the what happened this week with the Martin Truex deal last at Kentucky, when he got penalized, and all of a sudden that this week at New Hampshire they come up with a new language for that pit road rule, and that's what everybody targets. We want to be able to make them rewrite the rule book, you know, and that was what we did back in the day, and people are still doing it today. So it's kind of still the same aspect. It's just a smaller window to work in, you know?
And, Stephen and Joe Dan, can I break in for a moment? We've got our other guest, legendary gas man for the Intimidator, Mr. Dale Earnhardt Sr., and also host on SiriusXM NASCAR Channel 90, Mr. Chocolate Meyer. Let's bring him into the pit stop. Tim Despain, Stephen Wilson, and Joe Dan.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Come on in the house, Chocolate. We're going to talk old school racing. But the first thing I got to ask is, I was listening today on Sirius. How did the carpet do in your bed liner?
Oh, we're good, man. Well, we're all good. We're ready to go. So we're all fixed up. Truck's good. And, yeah, man, we're ready to take a trip.
Sounds good. Chuck, we appreciate you taking time out to come on. We got you. We got Joe Dan Bailey. I know you know Joe Dan. We got my good friend Stephen Wilson, CEO of SpeedwayDigest.com up in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And we're going to talk some old school racing. And I want to go out there and show out our little story if we can, y'all. Back in the day, I'm gonna use your quote there, Chocolate. Back in the day, I'm gonna tell my age. Back in the mid '80s, here in Talladega, I was very fortunate enough to work for Mr. Enix Daly, former owner of Northwood Sports Speedway. We would check out of high school here, and we would go sit in the Union 76 balls, Chocolate. I know you and Joe Dan remember them. We would sit in the 76 balls, and we would spot. But, you know, we took spot during the race and everything. But I was very fortunate enough to do that back in the day. That's sort of how I got started. And once I spotted some, I always had turn two. I got to move up in the tower there with and I can't remember his name, Chocolate. You probably can. All I remember is Bocce. I moved up in the tower and sat beside Bocce and all of them. But that's just a little bit about me. That was my first experience back in the mid-'80s here at Talladega Super Speedway. So y'all got the floor, Joanne, Chocolate, Steven. Y'all talk old school. I'm going to step aside a minute, and I'll be right back. I'm going to make a pit stop.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll tell you a couple things. And by the way, you mentioned Phoenix Daddy and Bocce, dear friends, guys that helped get this sport where it's at today. Guys that dedicated their life for it. Enix Staley was a guy that lost his brother to racing, and I remember Enix Staley very, very well from back in the day. And Joe Dan and I were teammates, man. You know, Joe Dan was the catch can man. I was the fuel man, and we worked together for a long time. So we really enjoyed it. And I don't know, Joe Dan, how long were you and I – how long were we did that for a couple of years, right?
Yeah, Chocolate. Hey, how you doing today? We were up there. I came up there at the start of 92, worked 92, 93, and 94 together. We were. I was real fortunate to be part of that group, and you know, we got a couple of championships for Dell's 6th and 7th, but we had a lot of fun and worked out there in the tire room a lot out behind the building, and then at the racetrack. We had a lot of fun together. It was a lot of fun back then.
Well, you know, I got to be honest with you. I still have a really, really good time, and I think the racing is great. I watched our sport change. I heard you guys talking about it. Yeah, we got a tiny box that we work in today, but we've done it to ourselves. I mean, you know, like NASCAR didn't just come up with a bunch of rules. You know, we made them come up with rules. We invented things. We did things, and I'm telling you, the people that work on these race cars, they're smart guys. They're artists. They figure out ways to make they bend the rules. I'm not going to say they break the rules. They bend the rules to NASCAR has to step in. And, you know, I hear NASCAR, a lot of people give NASCAR a lot of, you know, they don't like the way NASCAR has to do the rules, but they have to do the rules. We manipulate everything that they do. And when I say we, I'm talking about everybody that builds a race car. And NASCAR has to tell us what we can and can't do. If they didn't do that, it would really be bad.
Well, I think you have to take a look at going back to the tire issue or the lug nut issue. That's for one. When the teams were given a little bit of space into, well, how many lugs do you want to put on it? And then you get into the issue of how many teams were having tire problems. They box themselves, as you just said, Chocolate, and that's when NASCAR has to come up for a rule because it does become a safety issue. And, well, as you said, some fans love it, some fans hate it. But, you know, obviously, as the sport has progressed over the years, the cars have become so close, so competitive, and the teams have had to keep up with this. Money is obviously an aspect of this sport that everybody has to talk about. You know, you've got $10,000 fans going underneath the hoods of these cars that NASCAR eventually stripped away and, you know, the et cetera of these things. You know, as we move forward into the sport, you know, teams have to look at this wholesale. And what I mean by that is that where do these teams start to say, okay, we're spending millions of dollars on things, especially $10,000 fans to shave a quarter of a tenth off. Well, where does that come into play?
Well, you know, go ahead. You know, well, what I was going to say is, and look, all it takes is one team to do that. If one team spends $1 million on a lug nut and it makes that car better, every other team's going to have to do the same thing or they're going to get their butt kicked every week. So one guy figures out something, and if he can afford to do it, the rest of them are going to have to find a way to do it, or they're not going to be able to win, and that's what it's all about. So very, very competitive out there. Guys are looking for any kind of edge, just like you said. But you know, some of these guys act like there is no limit on how much money they can spend, but believe me, there is a limit.
Well, yeah, there's definitely a limit. You know, I mean, when and back to the start of this, when we were talking a minute ago, and you were talking about the way the guys think, you know, back to it. That is a compliment. As long as you're not compromising safety, the one thing you want to do is you want to make them rewrite a rule book. You want to be able to read that rule, find the loophole in it, and rewrite it. But when you do that, yeah, it's going to cost money. but the amount of money that you're going to spend, there's always the money there. The sponsor gives you X amount of money. The owners have the money. But you're going to take, and if you know that it's a $1 million lug nut, you're going to take from one budget in the shop and put it to another budget, and you're going to have that lug nut there in a matter of hours if you can buy it. And if you can't buy it, then you're going to buy the people that know how to build it, do it that way. You know, you're always going to figure out a way to acquire it no matter what the budget is. And that's how come the rules are like that, because if we didn't have these rules to put us in this box, the budgets would be so far out that we wouldn't be able to afford it. And, you know, so that's one of the things that we look at, and that's where NASCAR and their rulemaking is actually saving us from ourselves. They do this for us, because otherwise we're sitting there and we're just pushing the limit all the time and spending more money. So in the grand scheme of things, they're saving the sport by what they're doing.
My last thought on this before we get into a little bit of a conversation on some old school racing here is, you take a look at what NASCAR did this or tested this year at Michigan and Kentucky. Last year they went to tested a low downforce package. They brought it into 2016, and immediately the teams, they took about 750-800 pounds of downforce out of those cars, and immediately the engineers went to work. They found ways to get about 425-450 pounds of downforce back into those cars. So NASCAR went back to work again in the R&D center and went to an even lower downforce car. We saw the blades cut down onto them, and we saw the product taken out at Michigan and at Kentucky and tested again. So that is a testament of how this sport has changed so much, in the fact that engineers play such an amazing role in building these cars and getting around of what is in the rule book. So as we look at that, and we look at the teams that continue to produce, and especially there's a lot of teams out there that are working not only with themselves but with the manufacturer support, is it time that all of the teams or all of the manufacturers just get together and say, we need to come up with some kind of budget? And especially now that we have the collective system that is now within NASCAR to be able to control costs.
I don't think there's any way to do that. I really don't. I don't think there is a way to make that happen. Let me tell you, and I love to talk about racing. I do it all the time. I do it every day. I absolutely love it. I think racing is pretty darn good. I think we got some of the best racing that we've ever had. But one thing that we're missing right now, and we still get some of it. Don't get me wrong. We get some of it. And some of it in a lot of different ways. I think the chase is one of the ways that we have been able to put drama, excitement, drama into our sport. But we have got, each and every week that we go to the racetrack today, we've got 40 good race teams. Back in the day, you didn't. Back in the day, you had 15 or 20 good race teams, and you had 15 or 20 teams that were going to go out there, they were going to break a gear, they were going to blow an engine, they were going to spin out, something was going to happen, and that caution was going to come out, and you were going to get that excitement and drama. We don't have that anymore. We got races right now that we drop the flag, and at the end of the day, you got just as many cars running at the end of the day that you had at the start of the day, and that's because of good parts, good pieces, and good race teams. So we sometimes get a little short on drama. This week, Loudon, New Hampshire, about the first three quarters of the race, we were lacking some of that excitement and drama, but that caution came out, and by the end of the day, we were getting all the drama that we needed. So I love the direction of the sport right now.
Yeah, absolutely, Chocolate. It's, I was just fixing to look it up to see, but if I remember right, there was very few cars out at the end of that race. And today, it's not one of those deals where you can fall out and still run 30th. The cars are more durable. The people are more focused on making sure the cars are underneath them each day. But, you know, the other thing is we don't really have that definite black hat, white hat anymore in the sport either. You know, the good guy, bad guy feud that we had. Some people try to put it on Kyle. Some people try to put it on Kevin for a time. But, you know, I mean, really, really wearing that hat proud and making it, that's one thing that is, I feel like it's missing in the sport, you know. And that's, that was one of the things that was different from back in the day to opposite today. You always had the a little bit of a good guy, bad guy image going on. That feud is going on, that everlasting feud going on. You see it from time to time, but it's not as big as what it was. You know, and back to what we were talking about earlier with the with how we progress and, you know, and making the changes. That's been a never-ending tug-of-war also between NASCAR gives you a little bit, you know, or they don't give you a little bit. They take a little bit away. The teams create more, you know, just like the downforce you were talking about earlier. They took downforce away, so now you got to pull back on it, take some back. You know, and that's our job. That's the job of the team, sit there and figure out and figure the way to pull some back every time that NASCAR takes them away, you know, or the rules take them away. I just don't want to, you know, make it sound like NASCAR is doing it, but it's the rules do one thing, and then we do another, and we sit there and counter them. And that's a never-ending deal that we fight in the sport.
Well, and Joe Dan, I'm sorry, gentlemen, this is Tim. Joe Dan, I want to talk a little bit about, and I want to get Chocolate's take on this also. You know, Chocolate, back in the day, I loved using your slogan back in the day. But, you know, pit stops are different now. We don't have that many NASCAR officials down on pit road no more. We got the new timeline. Back in the day, whenever y'all done pit stops, you know, Joe Dan was a catch can man. You don't have a catch can no more. I remember, and Stephen probably remembers this too, the late great Kenny Parsons always talked about a pit stop under 13 seconds. Chocolate or Joe Dan, either one of y'all can answer this. Did you ever think that we would see a pit stop in the 12-second range?
Well, you know, that's funny that you bring that up because, you know, when I was with Earnhardt there, I ran catch can there for them when I wasn't doing tires on the backside of the wall, but I changed tires for a long time. Way back in 1990, I was working for Bob Whitcomb Racing, and we're up at Dover, Delaware, and it was the first time that we had had a Penske shock. We just went from Bilstein to Penske, and we had a really good car that day with Derek, and during that race, we're sitting there, and we're racing Rusty, and we're racing Ken Schrader for the win. Earnhardt had fallen out, and I'm going to get to that part of the story because he was really the show stealer that day. But anyway, so we're going along, we're racing, and then on the last stop, we came in. It was Buddy Parrott, Brad Parrott, and myself changing tires. We had three tire changers back then, and we beat both of those guys out. We beat the Blue Max team and the Hendrix team out of the pit. And when we did, we got four tires, but Mr. Hendrick came over the radio and he told Schrader, he said, "Hey, man, you can go chase down that 10 car because all he got was two tires." They pulled an 1899, and there's no way anybody changed four tires in 18 seconds, or under 19 seconds. And but that was just it. We broke another barrier that day. And when we did, we had track position, had a good car, and ended up winning the race. But even with Derek Cope winning the race, that wasn't the big story of the day. The big story of the day was the three car, because they broke a cam about 100 laps into the race. And when they broke that cam, they actually pulled it in the garage area, pulled the engine apart, changed the cam, and got the car back out there after changing the cam in the garage area. So, you know, that's the underlining stories, some of the stories that we had back in the day that was really amazing, the way these mechanics worked on the cars. We were able to do a 19-second pit stop, but heck, they rebuilt an engine.
Yeah, let me tell you what happened with pit stops, okay? Because back in the day that we're talking about right now, we never practiced pit stops. We never had time.
Right.
If we were doing pit stop practice, then the cars weren't getting ready. We had a limited amount of people. We all worked on the cars. Pit stop practice was every Sunday at the racetrack, every Saturday at the racetrack. That's the only time. We didn't have a gym. We didn't have a coach. We didn't have a trainer. We worked on those race cars all the time. You went and you bought your air guns off the Ingersoll Rand truck. You didn't make things. David Smith, who just recently passed away, David Smith had an old steel jack for the longest time. Then they come out with the aluminum jack. Then things started to change, and we had one group that said, "What we're going to do, we're not going to do anything except for have a bunch of guys that are going to train, and they're going to do pit stops only. They're not going to be the road crew. They're going to come in fresh. They don't even have to get here when the track opens. They're going to be fresh. They're going to do the pit stops. The day that that happened, it changed it for everybody. Everybody had to start doing the same thing. Everybody had to start training and working harder and coming up with stuff. And I'm not surprised at all to see the times come down like they have. That's due to great training and great equipment. You know, look, there was a time in the sport when you wanted something different, you had to build it. Now you just go buy it. So it's really changed. But the training that these guys go through today is something absolutely unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. It's amazing.
Sorry, Jordan. I know we got a group here, but Chuck, just real fast. Now a gas can man has to wear, you know, the helmet and everything. And back in the day, I love using your thing, back in the day, whenever you were fueling for the late, great Dale Earnhardt Sr., how much does a can of fuel weigh, Chocolate, for you to actually throw it up in there and then putting two cans in?
Well, a can of fuel weighs, I don't know, 95 pounds, maybe 100 pounds, with all the apparatus they got on there now. They took the catch can man away, which wasn't a bad thing. That was a guy that was standing between two race cars. That was a bad place to be during a pit stop. They've taken that away. You know, not much else has changed as far as fueling the car. The cans are still heavy. It takes – here's one thing that we have found out. These guys can change tires now quicker than you can put a tank of fuel in. Back in the day, it wasn't like that. You could fuel that thing up with two cans, and it'd still be changing tires. That gas man's under a lot of pressure now.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
You know, but also with that, you're looking at a group of athletes. I mean, these pit stop coaches, they go to the colleges. They interview juniors and seniors in colleges as sports athletes and football players and the nimble soccer players and the baseball players and that are out there, and they know that they're not going to play at the next level in their sport. So they take those athletes and they actually bring them in and they train them to be able to perform pit stops in this. So these guys are true athletes when they're going across the wall. So it's not quite as they're a little bit more nimble, a little bit more in shape than what people like me and Chocolate wore back in 1990.
Steven.
No, I was just going to go back here to this whole engine changing deal. I remember, and this was many years ago when Robert Yates and those guys blew an engine down at Daytona in the 500, and they pulled the engine out of the car. I believe it was in about 11, 12 minutes, something like that. Put it on an airplane and had it back in the Robert Yates engine shop before the race even ended out there. But you know, that's just a testament as to, you know, how those guys did it back then. So much different now. They'll just load the car off and just be done for the day. But yeah, much different out there. You know, we're talking about a lot of, you know, racing back in the day. And you guys were telling stories about Enoch Staley, and obviously he did a lot of here in the sport, helping build Talladega, running races in Daytona. But there's so much that is missing from the sport today that you know, most people have forgotten about, don't even remember, especially the newer fans. But, you know, as the series has progressed, they've gone to newer tracks. Even the truck series, which started on some of the smaller tracks, don't even go to places they used to go once before. When we look at some of the, you know, the old races out there, and we look at the competition of these tracks, and we look at how they used to race there, is it time for NASCAR to maybe look at some of these tracks and bring some of those, maybe even the truck series, back to them again?
I'll let you handle that one, Chuck.
Yeah, I don't see how you do that, guys. By the way, they tried that. They tried to open Rockingham up. And everybody that said, I hate they closed that because I go there, if they had just came back, it'd still be operating. They didn't come back. You know, they wanted it to back the way it used to be. They didn't come back. North Wilkesboro.
Right.
I hate to break anybody's heart, I hate to do this because I love to go up there to race. The place was outdated before we ever left up there. My wife and I took a little trip Saturday. We came by North Wilkesboro. It's done. It's gone. It would be dang near impossible, if not impossible, to go up there and race. Some of the places that we raced at back in the day could not do what we do today. Folks, I'm just telling you, we don't have guys racing out of the basement behind the house anymore or under the house or in the garage behind the house. We could not make it work like that anymore. Guys, I'll tell you something. Back when we started doing this, and Joe Dan's dad was one of my friends and a guy that went from Texas to Darlington, South Carolina to race back in the late 70s, early 80s, and finished 25th and got $1,200. You know, you could not make it work anymore. You know, of course, it wasn't anybody but him and Joe Dan and a couple of guys that volunteered. But we cannot go back. We have taken our sport and made it right up there with the NFL, with Major League Baseball. It's not a bunch of good guys just having fun anymore. It is professional racing at its best.
Yeah, and I mean, in the modern era, what we're doing right now, when you went by Wilkesboro the other day, Chocolate, we'll take Wilkesboro, for example. I love Wilkesboro. I could leave after a race there. I'd be back at my house in 30 minutes. But in the grand scheme of things, they don't have enough area up there to park today's TV truck. When we quit going there, they didn't have enough area to accommodate the fans. They had them walking across the highway down on 421, putting them where they're not safe. You know, I mean, Mrs. Staley, bless his heart, I love that track up there, and I love the people that put it on, and it was a great group of people, but they would have made themselves bankrupt trying to keep up with the era,
sure.
And they would never have been able to do it. I mean, it's unfortunate for it, but, you know, the way that TV took off with the series and the kind of demands that it put on the track, the small tracks like that, they wouldn't be able to accommodate that part of it in themselves, or much less be able to make a safe area for the fans. So that's one of the things. Chocolate's exactly right. We just, unfortunately, outgrew it because I'd love to be going to Rockingham an hour away and Wilkesboro 30 minutes away, you know?
Right. And, you know, obviously, you take a look at, you know, and I'll use this for example, and you take a look at Texas, you know, 1,500, 2,000, 3,000 people show up for a race out there for an independent race, you know, on an IndyCar weekend. There's other events out there at the same time. Is it, you know, my question was more pointed to, is it time to move them away from some of these events that, you know, are, you know, obviously severely lacking to the point that we're just not seeing the support in the races anymore, and move them to somewhere that is supportive of these races?
Go ahead. I only heard part of that, but let me give you some perspective here. We see, and we went through a great time in our sport where you know they couldn't build grandstands fast enough. Well, we've gone past that. But let me remind everybody, and I just saw this today. A couple things I want to talk about. To go to a race, to take your family to the race, is very expensive. Not the race tickets, but to go and stay somewhere. Let me just remind everybody that now you can go to Walmart or anywhere else and buy about a 50-inch flat-screen TV for about $250 that you can hang it on a wall in your house and see some of the greatest racing ever, because we've got a camera and everything out there. So I'm telling you, I think the sport's in pretty darn good shape. I love the racing, and we're able to watch it on our phone, hanging on a flat-screen TV, in our car, Twitter, Facebook, social media. We've got 1,000 different ways we can watch it. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what everybody's talking about. The ratings are down. The attendance are down. When you actually thought about the eyeballs on the sport, when you take it and think about how many people are sitting at home watching it, and I'm not talking about on the network. I'm talking about streaming it, okay, actually just sitting on your computer doing that. I know a lot of people that they don't have network just because they stream
all their programs, and you can stream live sports. So, you know, those numbers are a little bit misleading when you really look at. There's so many different avenues to be able to bring in these entertainment and sports, you know, or in racing right now, that your numbers are down for everything. You know, so it's a different world than what we live in. The same way the racing is, the fans are living in a different world where they have easy viewership, and instead of waiting in traffic afterwards, they turn off TV and walk out on their patio. You know, so it's just a different way to approach it. Now, with that being said, y'all all went to a race. Y'all know what it's like to be in the infield. Y'all know what it's like to have that experience, to camp out there. You know, to see it firsthand, to meet a driver firsthand, and that's something those people are robbed of, and they don't know it. You know, but that's one thing that they are missing, but they've opted not to do that. So it's just a different approach to it now. But I think the actual overall viewership and the fans are still there. It's just we haven't figured out a proper way to monitor them and put them in there compared to what the actual TV rating is, you know?
Exactly. And I want to ask real fast, Stephen. I hate to jump in there, but I want to ask this question. It took Dale Earnhardt Sr. 20 years to win the Daytona 500, and yep. I was watching that race, and it was just so ecstatic. And to see your face on TV, I mean, just what was going through your mind at that time, Chocolate? I mean, I just want to ask. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but I want to ask, what was going through your mind when Dale Earnhardt finally won the Daytona 500?
Well, that's not the first time we won it. That's the first time we finished first. We won it a lot of times, but we never could. We were one of the first ones across the line. And Joe, now I know what I'm talking about. We were always good when we went to Daytona. We just couldn't get the job done. But that day was a cool. And for me, I had my family with me. We were all down there together. And you can kind of talk yourself into believing that Daytona is just another race. It's not. It was one of the biggest things of my racing career. And absolutely enjoyed it. And, you know, still those memories are great.
Yeah, the for those guys, when Daytona was really cool. When I went to work over there in '92, and in '90, I was actually part of that Cope team that benefited from their flat run right front tire and got a ring that day. And we were pitted next to them that day, you know. And while we were all excited, I seen the disappointment that they had to live through. And you know, that was good to see them finally get one when they did. But also with that, David Smith was a guy that I used to room with, and I remember my first week on the tour with the Flying Aces. I went in the room and I was talking to David, and I said, "Well, I tell you, I know y'all guys have had a lot of tough luck, and you know, so I'm not going to wear my 500 ring around y'all guys." And David turned around and he answered to me, and he goes, "Well, you can wear that, but I don't have a place to put on five of my championship belt buckles." So, he kind of put it in perspective for me real quick. I got a whole lot of hardware there, big boy. Okay, is what he was saying. But I was glad to see those guys get it. It was that was definitely a special moment in this sport, and a special time for the greatest driver that ever strapped on a helmet, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. And I want to ask one more question because I know y'all are staying on longer than y'all agree, but we appreciate it. Joe Dan, can you talk a little bit about your dad, HB? Some of our listeners probably don't know that much. Can you throw some stuff out there about that?
Well, I mean, you know, he was just an independent racer out of Houston. I think his best finishes was he ran a fifth at Daytona one year and fifth at Darlington, and he won a Grand American race up at Nashville. Him and Tiny Lung lapped the field. He bought his first car from Bud Moore, and it was a Pontiac, and that was back when Bud Moore actually had Pontiacs before he ever switched to Fords, back when it was Joe Weatherly and Billy Wade was driving for him. You know, so he's been around for a long time. Got me in it when I was little, and when I failed little, went across the wall the first time when I was 17, and I was packing bearings back when I was 13, and that at the shop. But that's what we did, and you know, on my Facebook and on my Twitter, I still keep up with a lot of his old guys that talk to us to this day, and they respect what he did. And you took a little bit, and you made a lot out of it. But the main thing was, when you look at people like my dad, HB, and you look at Frank Warren and Cecil Gordon and, you know, a lot of those old school guys, they made a living, Walter Ballard, and they just did it because they enjoyed it. And that was, as my dad always said, that was his hunting and fishing, where, you know, people save up money for a big fishing trip or a big hunting trip or something like that. He would save up his money and, where he could buy tires and go to Darlington and take the guys that would work with him and go out there and have a good time. He always loved the Darlington races, and I still got a soft spot in my heart for Darlington. And anytime I get a chance to go to Victory Lane there, I love it, because that's the most precious place to me that there is on the circuit. If you win at Darlington, you've had everything together that day. So
exactly.
That just
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly, Joe Lynn. And, gentlemen, I'm going to hand y'all over to Stephen Wilson and let him send y'all off. And, Jordan, thank you very much. And Chocolate, Suzanne and I, and Stephen and his wife, Anne Marie, we will be in Darlington. That's our next race. And, Chocolate, I would like to find me some of them. You remember them old white Winston Cup pants that they had back in the day? I wish I could find me some of them to wear at Darlington.
Yeah, they might be hard to find, but I'm sure you look around, somebody's probably got some of them, all right?
Well, you know, talking back in the day, you probably got a pair, ain't
you? No, absolutely not. I'm, back in the Wrangler day, we wore blue jeans. In the Goodrich day, I might have some of those Goodrich pants, but no, I don't have any. No.
I'm going to see if I find me some of them, and I'm going to get me a score, and I'm going to put, when I'm in the media center, I'm going to put my little press sign up on the side of my fedora. And anyway, gentlemen, thank y'all very much. Jordan, thank you. Chocolate, thank you very much. I'm going to hand you over to Stephen Wilson and let him send y'all off. We appreciate y'all coming on. We're going to have y'all back on again. Stephen, go ahead.
All right, good talking with you.
Chocolate and Dan, I appreciate you guys coming on here tonight, talking a lot about today, back in the day race and everything. It's been a pleasure to have you two guys on. As we always do, I know you two guys don't have any sponsors to thank, but we'll at least let you guys tell us how they can follow you on Twitter, social media. Chocolate, let everybody know when you're on SiriusXM NASCAR, and we're going to let you guys get out of here for the night. But again, it's been a pleasure having you on.
All right, brother. Well, you know, for me, it's ChocolateMyers3 on Twitter. And every day, Monday through Friday, 11 until 3 on SiriusXM NASCAR Radio Channel 9.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you all for having me on tonight. It's Jody Ann Bailey, and that's at Coach JDB is my Twitter site from back when I was soccer coach. And whenever y'all come, anybody out there that comes to the Xfinity race, please come by and see me. I'm in the Xfinity garage each week. And come by and say hey.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy. See you later.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. I'll see you later. Thank you all.
All right, Steve. That was interesting. We got into a little bit of old school stuff there with Chuck and Joe Dan. I just love talking old school racing. Because, I mean, times have changed so much. I mean, and, you know, Chocolate Myers, he does a great job. And Joe Dan there, I mean, you know, he had some stuff that he couldn't talk about, and everybody was real generous about that. Stephen, we've rolled over into the next hour. I don't see no sense in talking about anything else. Do you have the TV? Wait a minute. We got the trucks are at Eldora tomorrow night, correct?
Yeah, we're racing it. We're racing on the dirt tomorrow night in Eldora.
That's right, and I don't have nothing up on my laptop. Do you have the times or anything?
Yeah, I got you covered. 5:15 NASCAR Camping World Truck Series qualifying from Eldora, followed at 7 o'clock. 5 qualifying event. Each will be 10 laps apiece. The Last Chance NASCAR Camp the World Truck Series qualifying event to get yourself in tomorrow night's main event, 15 laps, 8:15 tomorrow night. And then the main event tomorrow night, 150 laps broken down into three segments, 40, 50, and 60 lap segments, 75 miles out there at Eldora for the NASCAR Camp the World Truck Series going back to dirt. Now, going back over to Indianapolis, going to Indianapolis this weekend too for the final NASCAR Xfinity Series heat racing. We're going to do a little bit more Dash for Cash heat racing over there in Indianapolis. NASCAR Xfinity Series qualifying, 11:40 out there, followed by NASCAR Sprint Cup Series qualifying, 1:45 p.m. First heat race, 3:30. 20 laps out there to be immediately followed by another 20 lap heat race. Main event, 60 laps, 150 miles at 5:05 approximately, following the second heat. Then on Sunday, the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series, Brickyard 400, 160 laps, 400 miles out there on Sunday from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Steven, that sounds good. Let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website. Yes, Fullbush.
You can follow us at Speedway Digest, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and SpeedwayDigest.com.
Steven, tell AM and the boys we said hello, and we're going to sign off with a little bit of Hank Williams Jr., Country State of Mind. Steven Wilson and I will talk to you next week live from Talladega, Alabama.
That hot old summer sun make you beg for your next breath. So you best be on the creek bank late in the shade, chewing on a hickory twig. Pass that bottle, I'll have me a swig. I ain't got a lot, but I think I got it made in the shade. I'm just laid up here in a country state of mind, catching these fish like they're going out of style, drinking this homemade wine. Hey, if the sun don't come up tomorrow, I'm just laid up here in a country state of mind. I bet the old man's in the kitchen. He's got my kind of music on his radio. Drinking his beer and dialing up the request line. Mama and old Aunt Jones, probably in the dining room trying to use the phone. Me, I'm thinking about that girl and later tonight. Oh yeah. I'm just laid up here in a country state of mind. Hey, I'm catching these fish like they're going out of style. I'm drinking this homemade. Raising hands.